Now it's my great pleasure to introduce Senator Gary Humphries.
Thank you very much, Brian. Ladies and gentlemen, I see two of my colleagues in the Legislative Assembly here, Brendan Smith and Wayne Berry. And to all of you, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. I want to welcome all of you here today who attend this, are attending this annual act of remembrance for those who are victims of illicit drug use. For 10 years now, family, and I also see Bob McMullen, the member for Fraser as well, I'm sorry. For 10 years now, and Deb Foskey, anybody else wants to put their hand up? Sorry about that, my eyes are going, obviously. For 10 years now, family and friends have gathered at this beautiful spot to provide an opportunity each November to reflect on the human cost of a social problem that's afflicted our community now for at least three generations. I think I've been here for each of those 10 celebrations of those people's lives, and I think many of you here today have also been here for many of those occasions. It's a time both to draw comfort and understanding from the collective experience of other friends and family who've lost someone dear to them, such as the experience we heard today from Jan Lee of her daughter Neri, and to engage in a private act of tribute to someone's memory. No doubt each year we all hope that the list of names of those we remember will be a little shorter than the previous year, that there'll be some signs in this occasion of an abatement of the death toll attributable to illicit drug use. Perhaps it's my imagination, but each year, in fact, the list seems to grow longer, not shorter. This gathering is in fact an occasion to bear witness to a multiplicity of private tragedies as well as to a social or collective one. The great tragedy which laces that list that's read out here each year with sadness is that these deaths are avoidable. A person who uses illicit drugs, whether through the influence of others around them, whether through a sense, as Jan put it, of daredevilment, or because they have become addicted. Any of these people uses a product for which there is absolutely no quality control. The substance they ingest or inject may be heavily adulterated or lethally pure. The distinction is critical, but in general there is no way a user can safely make that distinction. And so they assume a considerable risk, often because physiologically their bodies give them no choice. And therein lies the tragedy. What other product used by thousands of Australians and with such potential to harm is so unregulated by any competent authority as to its quality? There is more government control over the contents of a can of hairspray or a tube of toothpaste than there is over an ecstasy tablet. And to the best of my knowledge, no Australian's ever died misusing hairspray or toothpaste. That central reality seriously undercuts any policy of harm minimisation, since such a policy can only assist an individual with the consequences of their use, but not with assessing the risks inherent in what they use. Of course, the fear that prevents us from exercising quality control over illicit drugs is the fear that this would send a signal to our young that drug use, so regulated, is now okay. And it's understandable that we should not lightly reverse decades of public policy focused on the message that any drug use is dangerous, however well regulated. However, I think that fear can be exaggerated. At the present moment, we wage a war of sorts on licit drugs, such as tobacco, while at the same time regulating the ingredients of a cigarette packet. The vast majority of our community is, I think, able to make sense of that mixed signal in this respect. So why not in others? In the course of this year, I've had the privilege of serving on the Senate Select Committee on Mental Health. Privilege might seem a strange word to use in this context, but in fact, members of the committee have had a real sense of privilege in listening to a host of deeply personal stories of those people who are affected personally by mental illness or who have family and friends who are. The evidence that this inquiry has heard has highlighted the many intersections between illicit drug addiction and mental ill health. Indeed, the Australian Medical Association lists substance use disorder as a form of mental dysfunction. It produced figures suggesting that in 1996, nearly 42,000 people in Australia suffered an illness associated with heroin or polydrug dependence. Over 170,000 had mental disorders associated with cannabis dependence and 38,000 with other drugs. That's over a quarter of a million Australians in 1996, and I'm not aware of any more recent figures. Nowhere is that crossover between mental illness and drug abuse more evident than looking at Australia's prison population. Witnesses to the inquiry have suggested that anywhere between 10 and 90% of prison inmates in this country suffer or have suffered from some form of mental illness. Of course, a very substantial part of that higher estimate includes those convicted of drug offences committed to satisfy a personal addiction. Most Australians would regard it as unconscionable that people suffering any kind of illness or disease should be denied access to treatment and rehabilitation for that illness. Certainly, we on the Select Committee have discerned a growing sense of disquiet that so many mentally ill Australians are indeed untreated for their affliction. So if, as the AMA suggests, drug addiction is best understood as a psychological problem than a lifestyle issue, why do we continue to treat drug abuse primarily in a criminal law context rather than primarily in a health context? It is questions such as this that have motivated those of us in the Australian Parliamentary Group for Drug Law Reform. The group encompasses a variety of perspectives on drug policy. The members share a conviction that there are serious shortcomings in aspects of Australian drug policy. Concerns include that, although there are occasional successes in interdicting the supply of certain drugs into Australia, in fact, the supply of illicit drugs is more or less unrelenting. Another is that the demand for addictive drugs drives a large proportion of the crimes, such as burglary, assault and theft, which affect every Australian. Yet another is that the age at which children are first using drugs is apparently getting lower. The group will be holding a forum in December to raise the profile of some of these issues and remind the community that crime and deaths by overdose remain intractable features of a drug-using society in the present environment. However, we need occasions like this one today to remind us that the statistics we talk about are real people with real potential whose opportunity to grow and develop and find happiness as members of our society has been lost in circumstances that can invariably be described as tragic. We all make mistakes, but the price of our mistakes is never as high as it is for a person who dies through using an illicit drug. If there is one thing we can do to change the climate that allows such deaths to occur, it is to individually help knock down the popular identification between drug addiction and moral turpitude. Using drugs is stupid, but even the best people can make the occasional stupid mistake. There are many forms of addiction, after all, in our society. And many of us can count our blessings that the things we're addicted to are legal and sanctioned by the society in which we live. Finally today, and before I finish, I acknowledge my colleague from the Assembly, Mary Porter, who's also here. Finally today, let's give thanks for the lives of those people that we choose to remember today. Let's remember that the promise that those lives represented, and let's commit ourselves to advancing through occasions such as this, the sort of society where such lives need not be pointlessly lost again. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Humphreys. I just want to take a few minutes. We received a greeting from some colleagues in Germany from an association of parents and friends for accepting drug treatment. And I'd just like to read out this greeting message to all those that are here. To our Australian friends, a message for the Remembrance Day on 7 November. Dear mothers, fathers, brothers and sisters and friends, today our thoughts are with you in distant Australia. We remember, with you, the victims of an existing repressive drug policy. If it has been possible for us in Germany, in contrast to your country, to introduce important changes, drug consumption rooms, expanded drug substitution programs, then that should be the path for your country to take also. Together, let us continue to fight for a drug policy that no longer marginalises, discriminates and criminalises, but that, in the end, prevents the suffering and death of our children, our relations and our friends. Of our elected representatives, we demand that they do not take the American path of the war on drugs, but rather take a humane drugs and addiction policy. In the thoughts and words of our Australian sister, Heather Brooke, while there is life, there is hope. That should be our first and final destination in drug policy. That hope for life should be given while we work to stop the dependency. We remain with best wishes, Jürgen Heimscher, Chairman.